Welcome back to another episode of Generally Assembled, your favorite House Republican podcast. Joined by Representative Jesse Topper. I'm Jason Gottesman, still unfortunately.
No, come on.
You know, is Bedford the town with the largest coffee pot?
Yes. We do have the coffee pot, yeah.
Yeah. I stopped there once on my when I was driving back from Pittsburgh on 30.
Yeah, right outside of our the Bedford Fairgrounds.
Yeah, that was back a much skinnier version of myself.
Yeah, you got the big coffee pot, and then you have one of the best little coffee shops in America, Hebrew's Coffee Shop, right there in town. Great coffee shop. We have Deja Brew, which is also in Bedford. I mean, we have some great little coffee joints.
And so apparently a lot of people who are good at puns.
Yeah, that's right. I had one of my colleagues came to Bedford. He saw Hebrews and he said, "Oh, what is this a Jewish coffee shop?" And I said, "Well, actually, they're run by evangelical Christians, but no, it's a great spot." He laughed. I said, I guess you could read a lot into the name, but it is, you know, you got the Hebrews, the biblical connection, the book of Hebrews, and then you have the Hebrews, right?
Yeah.
And like I said, we got Deja Brew, which is also, I never thought of it, but yeah, we have some great names of coffee shops.
Yeah.
Better than Starbucks.
Wow.
Which sounds like a financial institution of some kind. That All name, right? Well, if you just came here from another country and I said Hebrews or Deja Brew, you would think coffee shop. But if I said Starbucks, again, you'd have no concept of what it is. I don't think the first thing you would think of would be coffee, right?
No, I would think it would probably be a celebrity financial institution.
The CPAs for celebrities.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I like that. Starbucks.
Like Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah.
All right. Is that from Annie?
Yes, that is.
Yeah, all right.
Attaboy.
I'm cultured.
Yeah.
Seen a few things in my day.
Indeed you have, sir.
I've seen at least one live play that I can remember. It's a musical.
That's it?
I mean, I've seen other,
I love musicals.
One that I've actually bought tickets to.
I think one of my favorite,
Phantom of the Opera.
Phantom's your favorite?
No, it was the one I saw.
Oh, the one you saw. Well, yeah. First of all, classic.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite experiences seeing musical theater live was the Broadway version of Footloose. Of course, everybody knows of the Kevin Bacon the movie, but that show was great. And I sat my buddy and I sat right behind the orchestra pit, which is actually on Broadway and on off Broadway shows. Those are considered some of the worst seats because you're getting a lot of the pit orchestra noise, and it kind of. But for those of us who are musicians, it was awesome. Like I sat right behind the keyboard player / director and. Yeah, that was, I think Footloose would be my favorite experience, probably because of where I sat. But yeah, I love music theater.
Yeah, I haven't been to many, and I've been to even fewer concerts. I've only been to one actual live music concert.
Yeah, we've talked about that. Well, hey.
Listen. But I have seen things, you know.
Get some bucket list concerts you want to see.
If I have a bucket list, it's not going to involve musicals.
Really? Yeah. Not a concert? There's no concert that you're like, man, if I get a chance, I'm going to make sure I get to that one.
No, because I have had chances to go see some of my favorite bands, and I'm just like, nah, I'm not interested in spending money on that.
Interesting.
I mean, I love music.
Right.
You know,
there's something about live shows, though, live music. I guess that's the – maybe that – I don't think that's just
I mean, I feel the same thing about golf, but not everybody – you know, like that's that's where I spend my time and my energy and – you know, like if somebody was like, you know, here's a ticket, let's go, like I'd be okay. And the only reason I went to the one concert that I did go to because my wife was really interested in seeing it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we made a bit of a trip about it and, you know, it was fine. It was fun. I'm not going to say it was.
Well, I'm looking at Chuck for some support because like he knows that there's a sense of live music. And actually, I've been very fortunate enough in some of the, you know, amateur music that I've played in terms of like cover bands and things. I've done live work, and I've even played in studios some. I've done some studio work. And everybody, I think, would assume that studio work would be less stressful because you get to redo mistakes. It's actually just the opposite. Live music is so much more fun to play because you play through mistakes, whereas everything that happens in a studio like is noticeable.
All
right,
right.
Yep. And time is money in a studio, right? Yep. Like people are paying for the time there, so people are a little more cranky. Like it is playing live on stage is a great experience for a musician.
Yeah, I mean, look, the concert was fun. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not your thing.
Even in college, I had the opportunity to go see a lot of great bands that came through the University of Montana. You know, they would Pearl Jam's drummer was from Missoula, Montana, so they started a lot of their tours in Missoula. Yeah, and other big bands like the Decemberists. They're more of an indie band. You know, their lead singer Colin Malloy is from Montana. Went to the University of Montana for a year. So they'd come through, and you know, you had big bands like the Rolling Stones came through.
I think this is a generally assembled fan poll. We've done very few of those and probably followed up on even less.
No, I checked. Nobody answered.
All right. Well, what I was going to suggest is if you could submit like somebody like Jason, who's not a concert goer, it's not his thing, but if you'd be like, if you could just go to one, this would be the one. Maybe have some folks submit what that'd be. I'd be interested to see what people would say.
Well, I will tell you if I had now let's say if there's a bucket list for concerts, like what would you go to? Like if they were like, you can go to one concert before you die, but you have all these other things that you're doing, but you know,
right. one of them is concert.
You picked a package with a concert.
Gotcha.
Right. I'd go to the Flaming Lips.
That one won't be on the fan poll.
Chuck is over here like...
That one won't be on the fan poll.
Why that one?
Yeah. No, that one won't be on the fan poll.
No. I've seen their shows. I've seen, you know, videos of their... It's insane.
I mean, I thought you were going to go a little more classic. Anything other than that, Flaming Lips, actually is where I thought you might go. So I stand corrected. We'll get some input from our listeners. I feel good about it.
I know people's opinion of me probably just changed. That's okay.
Maybe.
That's all right. It's all right.
maybe. Listen, this guy does whatever you think of his choices in live concert selection. This guy knows how to communicate messages from the House Republican Congress.
Well, we've now moved to damning with faint praise. Man, this guy knows how to communicate.
Legislative communication really well. Yeah,
this guy is adequate at his job.
It's what you do. adequacy. We had that number, that word came up a lot during the Basic Education Funding Commission. It's adequacy. What is adequate? And I would always kind of be like, wow, we're really celebrating a word that is usually not celebrated. Like normally it was always says, oh, it's adequate. Like that's not a compliment. You are far more than adequate
in terms of
the job that you do for us. But yeah, we have gotten to that point in the culture period where adequate, I mean, okay, let's talk a little workforce, right? We talk about workforce development all the time. And what I was thinking about this the other day, one of the things we hear from employers when we go around and see, you know, what can we do to help our workforce? And they say, listen, we need people that are going to show up on time and pass a drug test. That's adequate.
Yeah.
Like they haven't even gotten any of the skills of the job. Like we need people that show up on time, can pass a drug test, and we'll put them to work. We'll train them for everything else. Like that is truly where we're at in terms of, and I thought when I was thinking about this in the education space, I was like, I mean, we never even thought that was something we had to teach in K-12 education, particularly high schoolers. The kind of the soft skills of, can you look someone in the eye and shake their hand, and Can you communicate at a basic level in a job interview? Can you show up for the job interview? Can you show up on time? You know, but these are now skills that need to be taught in a way that I don't think we ever envisioned.
Yeah, and look, I think that shows a couple of things. One, I think it shows how open and accessible our job market is for people who truly want to work and are looking to extend the skills that they have into meaningful employment, especially if they're in a situation where either they don't like their current job or they find themselves out of work. I also think it shows how great our usually small business owners are. Because, you know, when you're talking about a factory that maybe employs, you know, 200 people, it's probably a family-owned, you know, company that, you know, I'm thinking about all the ones that I've toured here in my, you know, line of, you know, work working mm-hmm. for legislators and lawmakers and back in their districts. You know, a lot of these family-owned companies that make a product that then they sell to maybe a larger company or a construction, you know, home builders or whatever, yeah. that you don't know that some family company is making it with 200 workers in, you know, the middle of Snyder County, but they're doing it and they employ people and they are willing to take the time out to teach people, usually in their community, a skill that will grow the community by helping the factory stay open, providing a family sustaining job, turning a person's life around when they're fully committed to working and being a productive member of society.
But we need to incentivize that. Like, you're right, they're doing a great job, mm-hmm. but they're mostly doing it on their own.
Right.
Because we, in government, particularly what we saw through COVID, we were incentivizing people not to work financially.
Right. And that's changed the nature of workforce and,
that
and
is,
how
yeah.
people
and
view
it's the
work.
Nature of government, right? It's the nature of government to always want to step out a little more and take care of more and more people. But that does incredible damage to those businesses that you were just referencing mm-hmm. because they can't compete with, you know, they're offering people come work and get paid. So when the government says stay home and get paid, that's a hard competition for them.
No, you're absolutely right. But, you know, that during that COVID time, and I still have a wide berth of patience for people, especially in the service industry. And, you know, the service industry, for how much, you know, the people there are working very hard, is not what it was 7 years ago. You have people who are, you know, they're there because I think we're almost seeing a reboot in what that looked like. You have younger people, mm-hmm. people just starting out, or people who are looking for maybe retirement job. The people that, you know, used to work to try to, I just think it's different.
It is.
It's a different atmosphere because of COVID. And a lot of that changed. There's a big gear shift in how people wanted to move from those jobs into something higher paying because they had the opportunity to stay at home. They could get education. And then also going back to those jobs required them to be paid more. And then they were in a competition over salary.
Exactly. So here's what we've seen, at least locally, I think, with the service industry, which was decimated, you know, during mm-hmm. COVID. So all of a sudden, if they're getting paid $20 to $25 an hour, let's say, at a big name convenience store or mm-hmm. at, you know, a big chain or something like that, and the mom and pop diner says, "Well, we need people and we need you at," I mean, they've increased their rates, but it's $16 an hour. Let's
right.
say. Well, they can't compete. But
yeah.
but if the guy at the diner says, well, but in order for me to pay my people $25 an hour, I'm going to have to raise the price of the burgers and the fries and the milkshakes so much, I will lose my customer base. Mm-hmm. They're in a no-win situation.
Right.
They can't keep staff because if they increase the amount that they're paying their staff to the point that it's competitive, they then lose their market because they can't compete on the food price. That's when government drives the economy. That's what happens. That's what people don't see when they talk about raising the minimum wage. They don't know what it does to the cost
right.
of goods and the cost of services. So if that's inflated because of it, people aren't actually keeping more money. Their front of their paycheck might say it's more money, mm-hmm. but if they're spending more and the cost of living goes higher, it's a what do they call that? A net zero gain, right?
Yeah.
Like you're not getting ahead.
Yeah, your buying power remains.
That's right. In fact, you're hurting then the businesses that are like, this is becoming too much. I can't operate at this margin and keep my customer base.
Yeah.
And that's the downside of that economic thought.
And that also bothers me when you hear a lot about this quote unquote greedflation, where they're like, oh my gosh, the prices are going up when they don't need to. And that's really just a masking. I think, are there people who take advantage of the system? I think there's a very few small number of bad actors out there. But we already have laws on the books
right.
to deal with price gouging and all of that stuff. And, you know, the system generally works when those are reported. You know, it's investigated and looked at. But then when you're blaming the rising costs on small business owners, manufacturers, construction companies, people that are operating and on such small margins. I mean, you don't need to. One of the things that I always liked when I was younger is going to 24-hour diners. right? College, when I was younger, mm-hmm. you can't sleep, you're up, you're hungry, you know, you're doing whatever. 24-hour diner was a great place to get a slice of America, a slice of your local community. I don't know. There is all of our 24-hour diners in Carlisle, where I lived, have closed.
Yeah.
Not closed, but they're not up for 24 hours. There's right, one right. that just reopened. But what is open 24 hours? Just like you said, Sheetz.
Mm-hmm.
Sheetz is open.
Yeah.
You can go there and get your MTO at 3 in the morning.
Sheetz, Wawa, Rutter's, all those. You can.
I'm still bitter we don't have a Wawa out in Carlisle, but you don't have one out in Bedford or Fulton either. So.
No, and we don't need them because we got Rutter's.
Rutter's does make a delicious breakfast.
Yeah, I've already got Rutter's and Sheetz, so we're fine out there. But not that I don't.
But
enjoy
they're the ones that can survive. Football.
Absolutely, Walmart. And what you just said about the bad actors, you know what people have to realize is, you know when bad actors really can get on their feet and work, is when the government's taken away all their competition.
Yeah,
we've seen that in the insurance market. We've seen that in so many markets where when the government gets involved and picks winners and losers, and the winners are left standing, and they're the only ones, that's when bad acting can really take a hold, because there is no competition. There's no fundamental free market economy that's out there. And that is, I think that is the message that it might take a little more to explain on our side of why the free market and allowing more dollars to be in people's pockets as opposed to government deciding which programs, even the ones that are good programs, even the mm-hmm. ones that sound great, and even in some cases, ones that are really good, right? But when we influence the market as government, it never works well long-term, sustainably, for the average working middle-class person. And that has absolutely been repeated time over time in history.
And I think when people go back and look, you know, 50 years from now about what we did for the 3 years around COVID from 2021, 2022, and like you said, the government paying people not to work, influencing you know, the economy in the way that it did. You heard the message loud and clear from the people on the ground, right? Let us open. Stop paying people not to work. We need our employees back. And now it's, you know, the tail end of that is we need them back in the office. People are finding what works and what doesn't work. And then how you sustain, you know, the normal
people
that we
had. People have adapted, right.
But the normal that we had is still something that people crave, because it was a way that worked for the largest amount of people. Now, there might be, you know, folks on the other side of the aisle who want to argue with that. But
sure.
There's a desperation to get back to the way that it was, because that's the way that everybody expected it to be, and it's the way that it worked.
One thing that COVID should always serve us, as you talk about history and looking back, it should show the United States of America what happens when big centralized government takes over. And oh, by the way, at the time, listen, there were a lot of, quote, good reasons for it to happen, mm-hmm. mostly centered around safety and security of the people.
Right.
But the long-term effects, this is why you can't substitute freedom for a false sense of security.
Sure.
And we were able to see it all play out in that couple-year time frame. And what my hope is that it has made the message of freedom and the message of limited size and scope in government and the message of what happens when businesses are not able to operate in the way that they think is best and that said the government does. I think that if all those lessons are learned, we've been able to see the example of what happens when that doesn't work that way. My hope is that you will see a new way of looking at it from a cultural perspective, because I've always said people elect the government. The government is reflective of the people. Government is reflective of the culture. If the culture has an entitlement mentality, then so will their government.
Mm-hmm.
But if the culture has a freedom mentality, I believe so will the government.
Yeah, I think COVID goes stand for the proposition that government has about 2 weeks in which people will listen to it. Remember, like 15 days to flatten the curve? And then when that was over, people were like, well, that didn't work. Can we please go back to our lives?
Listen,
and the government was like, no.
No, no. And I think that was the – right? You give an inch.
Right.
Government will take a mile.
Right.
It's very nature, right? Because,
yep.
You know, so we've seen it time and time again. And I really think that, again, learning lessons from the past, learning lessons from history, right?
Yep.
Those that don't learn from history, do repeat it, all that. Is so critical for us to remind folks of yes, we're still seeing the residual effects now, but mm-hmm. let's also not forget the effects as they were happening and people were up in arms.
I mean, it's something that I remember vividly. I'm sure everybody in this business does.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, we only have a few more days left of legislative session. Mm-hmm. Judging by this week, not a whole lot of big things are getting done. It appears as though there's some games being played, given by some of the bills that were scheduled today, with 4 days that are left. I mean,
look, I mean, we talked about this last week from a Pennsylvania legislative standpoint. Not a whole lot of big ticket items going on right now, and actually that's probably, in some ways, you don't want to see stuff rushed just so you can say you got it done. Quality is always better than quantity when it comes to legislation. We just have to keep, you know, particularly as we sit here in the minority still as House Republicans, we have to keep our eye on every bill, on every sentence, on every bit of legislative language, and make sure that our first responsibility, do no harm to our constituents as we move towards the end of session, speeding towards the World Series, speeding towards the midway point of the NFL season. So many things that we're speeding towards here, speeding towards Thanksgiving.
Yep. Well, and I think it's we'll be remiss, though, if we didn't conclude by sending out our best wishes to the folks in Florida and still in those in Western North Carolina and Georgia who are dealing with Helene and then now bracing for Milton.
Some of the images, Jason, and we've seen natural disasters before, right? Some of those images from Asheville and some of the places in the mountains. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. And for a place that's not obviously those folks weren't. When you live on the Gulf Coast, you think that you might have to battle a hurricane.
When you live in Florida, they even sell like when the houses now come with like window protection.
Right, right. Like it's still not good, but you kind of know going into it. Boy, the devastation of that, some of those inland places. Mm-hmm. And we know there's a lot of recovery efforts. There's a lot of recovery, a lot of folks in Pennsylvania that are sending resources and anything we can do, you know, to get that word out.
And Task Force One has been down in helping with Helene, and I'm sure will be deployed for
Milton
as well.
Yeah,
volunteers, people stepping up from electricians to just guys who want to go down with a chainsaw and cut trees and get people cleared up. And
it's the best of humanity. It's short term mission work. It's hometown mission work, but it is mission work nonetheless. And it really goes to the heart of the people that we have, not just here, but all over the country that, you know, see that image on TV and don't just say, oh, that's a shame for them. But like, what can I do? Yep. What can we do collectively? And we're seeing that once again, the amazing ability of the American spirit to rebound after such things.
Well, I think we'll leave it there. That was well said. All right. Well, that's generally assembled for this week. We'll see you, soon-ish. Of course, we're available wherever you want to find us. We're old episodes on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. YouTube Shorts. I love seeing the YouTube Shorts that Chuck over here puts together. Those are really some great clips. And, you can get into a little PA House GOP podcast wormhole with the shorts that go on. So that's a nice little way to spend some time if you're looking for some quick bits about what's going on here in the
or if you're having trouble sleeping at night.
Only if you want to listen to Grove Unleashed.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So podcast for this week for Representative Topper. I'm Jason Gattis, and we'll see you all very soon.